This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, November 3rd, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
The 2011 Pink Trash Ball will be held Thursday, November 10th at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. The Dallas band Vocal Trash will provide entertainment, and trashy peak costumes are encouraged. Proceeds benefit the Ozark affiliate of Komen for the Cure. Tickets and more information available at komenozark.org or 750-PINK.
We have a full show for this Thursday. Later, Bill Walker explains how his discovery of a box of documents led to a surprising history of his Arkansas-born father in World War II. And challenges facing the Inuit will be the subject of three area talks this week.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums, and with me on the phone, as he is most Thursdays, is Michael Tilley, the editor and publisher of the City Wire that covers business, politics, arts, entertainment, and more for the Fort Smith region. And how are you on this Thursday, Michael?
I am well. Beautiful weather. I love this weather. And go Hogs.
Very, very autumnal today.
Yes.
You have had and will have busy times in the Fort Smith area. Let's start with last week's. It's been a week now, almost a week to the hour, that Whirlpool announced it's closing the plant there. What has happened in the 6 or 7 days since?
Well, it's interesting you said a week. It almost seems like a month already. It's just almost like time stood still from that point. But one of the things that's happening, and I don't think I'm supposed to know about this, so we'll just have a little exclusive here on Ozarks at Large, but tomorrow key Whirlpool folks are coming down from Benton Harbor to meet with state and local officials to talk about employee assistance, retraining, and also how to market the property for this plant. I mean, we're looking at more than 1.2 million square feet of property. It's not just, you know, your typical plant you can just, you know, convert into a couple of, you know, other plants or an apartment complex or something. I mean, this is a facility that one time employed close to 5,000 people. So it's got a warehouse component to it. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do. I know the chamber has talked about working with consultants or even hiring a consulting firm to help them try to do something with the property, which also tells us, Kyle, that there's no, you know, there were some folks who said, well, if Whirlpool's not closing down until mid-2012, there's still some hope that the market will recover and demand will return for appliances, and Whirlpool can sometimes change its mind. But, and anything is possible, but it's just not something like even the chamber folks. Typically, the folks who have the most optimism have any optimism.
Mm. Well, there's one business that will be affected by this that you've written about on thecitywire.com, trying to adjust, and that's Cosmo Cooler.
Right. It's well, their product is Cosmo Cooler. It's a company called Riverbend Industries, and the owner is Ron Embry and his family. And Ron's a unique character. You know, he's more of an entrepreneur than a factory owner. And what he did is he hooked up several years ago with a couple of gentlemen up in Northwest Arkansas. And one was a coach at Garfield Elementary, a track coach. And this track coach wanted a cooler that he could stand up on the course, along the course, without having to put it on a 6-foot table or something. So he created this rudimentary, you know, tripod stand to sit the cooler on. Well, long story short, they patented a design in which these legs come fold out of the cooler. It's really neat to look at, and it's one of those things you look at, Kyle, and you think, why in the heck didn't I think of that? You know, it's innovative, but it's, you know, it just hits you as being very common sense also. So Ron is working with some other manufacturers to help with the legs. He's worked with Sam's Club, and they did a test sale down in South Texas. And the sale, the product sold well, and they want some more. Sam's wants some more. And so Ron's trying to gear up. He's trying to work with Arkansas Economic Development Commission on probably some tax breaks to help buy the equipment to produce this. But this is his way, he says, of trying to keep the doors open. Because 60% of the business he does now is with Whirlpool. So it's just an example of what, you know, some local companies are trying to do to hopefully avoid having to completely shut down. And his plan employs about 118 folks. So, and he thinks that if this Cosmo Cooler thing takes off, it could help preserve 20 to 25% of those jobs.
Yeah, that's
right. So that's the plan. But it's just, you know, it's a good human interest story about, you know, a real impact of this Whirlpool news and what one person is trying to do to avoid the ultimate impact.
Jobless rates for the state came out and about flat, but still higher in most metro areas than they were at this time a year ago.
Yes, Kyle, in all eight or in seven of the eight metro areas interconnected to Arkansas, the rate for September is above the rate for September 2010. That's Hot Springs was the only region to avoid that, and they had a slight decrease. But and in Fort Smith, we increased from 7.9 to 8%, and I think it increased from 6.6 to 6.9 in Northwest Arkansas. But now 6.9%, majority of the 360-something metro areas around the country would probably love to have that. So that's not a problem. But in Fort Smith, you know, we're on to almost three and a half consecutive years of a higher above 7% unemployment rate. So it's just you know, continued example of this so-called jobless recovery, unfortunately.
Finally, you remember when you were a kid and you thought Christmas would never get here? I'm not going to equate Tuesday's 1% prepared food sales tax to Christmas, of course, but we've been talking about this a long time, and Tuesday is Election Day.
Yes, it is, and we'll see. Of course, the analogy with Christmas is I just hope we don't have any returns after to take back, and it causes the season to last a little longer. But, yes, hopefully we can get this 1% prepared food tax issue out of the way. Kyle, this thing has just been, it's been unusual from the sense of the drama that it's created. You know, 22 of 28 cities around the state have enacted a 1% without a vote. And even those that had a vote didn't have this type of drama. So, the bitterness and all the drama related to this 1% in Fort Smith has just been highly unusual, and it will be nice to get it settled. I personally think, not that you asked my opinion, but I think that I don't see how it's going to pass. There's been so much misinformation, and the city has not handled well the marketing and the information about why the tax is needed and why the convention center is necessary. And I've talked to a lot of folks who are typically progressive-minded, and they're just saying, look, there's just too much unknown about it. I'm probably going to have to vote against it. So I'll be very surprised if it passes.
Well, you know, to continue the Christmas holiday metaphor, the day in some countries after Christmas is Boxing Day. So hopefully.
Hey.
Okay, all right.
Well, I don't know. We could set up a ring in the convention center. Maybe that's the way we raise money.
Okay, so Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of the City Wire that covers business, politics, arts, entertainment, and entrepreneurial ideas.
And boxing, maybe.
Pugilism, right? That's
yep.
Boxing?
Yeah, you college kids and your big fancy word.
Well, Michael, take care, and I'll talk to you next week after the election.
All right. Talk to you later.
Carlos Velasquez will bring another part of the world to Northwest Arkansas this weekend. He has lived with the Inuit three times and has won many awards, including the Rosa Parks and Grace Lee Boggs Outstanding Service Award from the North American Association for Environmental Education. Tonight, he'll speak at the Fayetteville Public Library. His talk is titled, The Arctic Inuit, A Harbinger. Tomorrow night, he'll be at the Unitarian Church in Eureka Springs, delivering the talk, The Inuit, Victims of Global Warming, and Sunday at the Omni Center in Fayetteville, discussing The Inuit, Honoring a Past and Creating a Future. The events are sponsored by the Ozark Headwaters Group Sierra Club and the Omni Climate Change Task Force. This week, Ozark's at-largest Christina Thomas talked to Carlos.
Carlos Velasquez is a Native American, an Otomi. It is because of his heritage that he was invited to the Arctic to visit with the Inuit as part of an intercultural exchange.
When they first told me, we'd like to send you up to Nunavut, I didn't know Nunavut from a hole in the ground. So I said, well, let me think about it. So I went to the library, looked it up, and I saw how far up north it was, how cold it was. And I told him, no, I really didn't feel like going that far north.
The following year, they asked him again, primarily because of his status as an American Indian elder. This time, he agreed. Once known as Eskimos, the Inuit are an isolated people and inhabit the Arctic regions of Siberia, Alaska, Greenland, and Canada, where Carlos visited. Primarily nomadic, efforts were made at the end of the 19th century and into the mid-20th century in an attempt to improve the conditions of the Inuit. However, the assimilation of the Canadian Inuit continues and is more by coercion than by choice. The acculturation of the Inuit involves education, schooling, something the Inuit were not and still aren't used to, and they remain very isolated. Thus, the reason for Carlos's visits. He has been there three times.
The first trip was primarily to speak at schools, kids, elders, anywhere that, you know, they had a group of people that you can speak to and kind of share as far as what's happening down here and self-esteem type of thing.
He speaks with the Inuit children about things like bullying, as they are not accustomed to being around other kids, and suicides. In the dark months, when the sun doesn't come out at all, there's a lack of activity. They have trouble finding things to do, and many teenagers are committing suicide.
The village I was at, or the hamlet, Pond Inlet, in February, which is all dark season, they had four suicides. They had a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, and two 18-year-old boys had committed suicide. And I said, that's tragic. And that's just 1 month. They have many more.
The kids there are just like kids everywhere. They get bored. But unlike here, they have nowhere to go. Carlos says that the main thing the Inuit need is education, about health and hygiene, and in other areas as well.
The kids, if they make 15 or 16 years old and have teeth, they're lucky because all of a sudden they're being given money by the government, which, of course, they spend on sweets. They drink sodas, they eat candy, and they are still looking forward to things that we know is going to happen, but it hasn't. Sugar diabetes is going to be a very big problem. Of course, the teeth are being a problem right now. Gangs are going to be a problem. They've never lived together, but it's going to happen. So these are things that they're going through, and the education system is as good as they can get because you have to get teachers that, you know, from down south in Canada to come up. And kids don't see any reason for algebra and geometry and things that could help them if they lived in any other place.
He reiterates the fact that having some of their own educated is critical. He applauds the Canadian government for taking those interested down to the capital, Iqaluit, for education. Even being the capital, the town has only 7,000 inhabitants.
But they do have training centers there, and after a year, they'll send them back as teachers. Well, I know compared to, you know, here, eight years of college still doesn't make you a qualified teacher in many areas. But up there, if you spend 1 year to a year and a half being trained, when you go back to some of these villages, you know more than just about everybody in that village. And you become a teacher, and because you're one of them, they'll listen. They'll say, well, this person is from my village, and look what they're doing. And I've seen it happen to a good friend, and I can see the effect it has on the youth. And that's basically what they need.
Not only do they need educators, but also people to be trained as mechanics to fix snowmobiles, electricians, carpenters, and people to work in stores. Prior to his work with the Inuit, Carlos was the environmental director for the Eastern Band of the Cherokee Nation in North Carolina, where he resides. He has won many awards for his service in environmentalism. It is also because of his connections with environmental educators that he has been asked to visit the Arctic, where climate change is having a great effect. On his last visit, he spent time with the environmental people up there.
Going out and seeing what's happening. And actually, they were taking me out, showing me one area where they're losing sight of the winds. The winds blow and make dunes in the snow. And they can tell from looking at these dunes in the snow where the wind's coming from, how fast it's going. And unfortunately, the melting they had was freshwater. And we were going over freshwater, which they thought was heavy ice, and we went through it. And they were feeling very bad. course, I felt bad too. Fortunately, when it broke through the ice, it broke from the side, so we were able to climb off. But the idea being that they didn't even know it themselves, that this was unsafe because they've been doing it all their lives. And every time I saw them or hear from them, they apologized to me because they felt it was their fault. They should have known. And they don't anymore. They can't go out on the ice. They can't go out after caribou where they used to.
Not only can they not go out on the ice, but holes in the ice used for fishing are getting bigger. And people are building mines for iron ore, leaving garbage behind, staining the earth, and killing the animals the Inuit hunt and rely on for food.
Man starts to go in there and pollute some of the areas like where the narwhal live, where I happen to be. The narwhal and the belugas are the big things up there. And the areas that they breed are starting to become contaminated from people who are going up there for mining the iron ore, which is a pure ore up there.
The effects that humans have on the animals is not only environmental. People are tagging animals up there, as they do everywhere, to track them, where they eat, what they do.
A lot of times we don't take into consideration the animals themselves. A very sad case that I've seen more than once is the collars, these tracking collars that they put on polar bears. Now, polar bears are, they're sea animals. I mean, they can swim 50 miles and no problem. And they're made to chase the seals. And seals, when they're swimming, of course, it's safer for them to stay in the water. So, but they still have to breathe, so they'll make a breathe hole. And a breathe hole usually runs anywhere from 6 inches to a foot, depending how it's frozen closed. Well, when a polar bear is chasing a seal, if you ever look at a picture of a polar bear sideways, you can see their head is long and pointed compared to a brown bear or a grizzly, which is flat. So what happens is when they go into the air hole to try to grab the seal, when they have the seal, or even if they miss it, they can't get back through the hole because this collar is holding them in it. And it's causing a lot of problems because the bears are choking themselves trying to get out. So what we think is a wonderful thing to do when we get in there and wholeheartedly do it, let's stop and think of what the ramifications are, what the consequences are of what we're doing.
Climate change is having a real effect in the Arctic. Carlos mentions the glacial effect. As a glacier melts, it is alleviating pressure on the snow and earth beneath it, causing the earth to expand, resulting in massive flooding. He also recalls a phone call he received from a friend in Iqaluit.
And he was yelling. He says, it's December. He says, it's almost Christmas, and it's raining. They have never had rain in Iqaluit in December. And the bay, which is their Frobisher Bay, hadn't frozen yet. And they were panicking. It's raining. And raining in December, that's a tragic thing to do. So these are all effects that are going to be happening. And a lot of people aren't even aware of what they're going to happen. A lot of scientists haven't even looked at these effects. They're seeing the water. They're seeing the conveyor, which is the Gulf Streams, which are changing. They're seeing that happening. But again, there's a lot of things that they're coming, you know. Like going to the movies, you see the previews, this is coming.
Not only does Carlos travel to the high Arctic, he travels all over the U.S., giving talks and programs, investing his own time and money. He says that he made a promise to the Inuit, and to himself, that he will take every opportunity to show what is happening up there. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Carlos Velasquez will speak about Inuit matters tonight at the Fayetteville Public Library, tomorrow night at the Unitarian Church in Eureka Springs, and Sunday at the Omni Center in Fayetteville. He talked with Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas earlier this week.
Earth, sky.
Today, a special program about biomimicry, using designs in nature to solve human problems, made possible in part by Dow.
Nature is clean, green, and sustainable. Human industry is not.
You're listening to inventor Jay Harmon of the engineering research and product design firm Pax Scientific Incorporated. Harmon used a design from nature, in this case, spiraling whirlpools of water, to create what he calls a frozen whirlpool, useful as the rotary part of a machine or pump.
So what I did was, when I froze the whirlpool that you see in your bathtub, it's exactly the same geometry as a hurricane or any other spiral, like, you know, the curl of your eyelashes. This shape is archetypal in nature.
Harmon's frozen whirlpool can stir 10 million gallons of water with just a couple of light bulbs of power. Today, this design from nature keeps hundreds of water tanks in the U.S. and other countries clean without the use of chlorine or other chemicals. Harmon is working now to scale up his frozen whirlpool to clean the air of a whole city by creating rising air that lifts air pollution past the inversion layers that trap it. Visit Biomimicry Nature of Innovation at earthsky.org or fastcompany.com. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
It is Thursday, November 3rd, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Mazalkar.
And this is the part of Ozarks Large where we welcome Becca Bacon-Martin, the features editor from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, to the studio.
Okay, if you guys are having the kind of week that I've had this week and last week and I wish I drank, because there's a scotch tasting tonight.
And what I really like about this idea is I have a pretty uneducated palate when it comes to scotch. I don't drink it. And
really?
Why does that shock you?
We think of you as very sophisticated.
Yeah, very sophisticated.
Okay. We see the whole James Bond scotch thing.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that image. I hate to blow it now. But the idea that you'll learn about a libation that has so much more history and so much more nuance than I ever knew.
With a master of scotch, Robert Sickler, you know, apparently there are very few masters of whiskey in the world, and he's one of them. So 6 o'clock tonight at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, tickets are $75, but that does include all the different scotches you'll taste.
And I have some friends who do drink scotch, and they say that some of this is some of the really, really good stuff.
Okay. Well, there's a concert down the street from the Walton Arts Center that's probably more of a Coors Light kind of event.
Okay.
Guy named John Oates.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in a little band called Hall & Oates that might have been around about the time we would have been drinking a little beer.
Yeah.
He's currently on the road in support of his new album, Mississippi Mile, which is a collection of songs from the Mississippi Delta. So he's gone kind of a different direction. Mm-hmm. Should be interesting. He's been touring on his own for about 10 years now, or with a band of his own. He performs at 8 o'clock tonight at the UARC It's Bowl Again, Not Ballroom in Fayetteville.
I think I had just gotten ballroom into into my frontal lobe, so I'd say that. So now it's the bowl again.
I'm told it's the bowl again.
Okay.
Down the street from the Walton Arts Center, tickets are $22 at the door. And the Ozark Folk Festival starts tonight in Eureka Springs.
Got a great lineup.
They've got Big Smith. They've got Split Lip Rayfield. They've got Still on the Hill. Big Smith plays tomorrow night. Split Lip Rayfield plays Saturday with Three Penny Acre.
That's a good show.
It's going to be a good weekend. OzarkFolkFestival.com.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. Bill Walker knew his father served in World War II, and he knew his father was a well-respected attorney in Arkansas. But the discovery of a box of documents and letters 6 years ago, after Bill's father's death, revealed more about his father, George, than had been previously known. Through letters written home to family and actual military intelligence manuals found in those boxes, Bill Walker discovered his father had been a high-ranking figure in the development of military intelligence during the war. The letters and details from the other materials are collected in the fascinating new book, Nazi's Nightmare. This week, Bill Walker discussed the book with me.
I used to think that when you read in the part where they're training them to be good agents, and they're talking about personal description and description of areas, I think he practiced his art of that when he rode home on subject matters that he could discuss. And almost every letter, I only put it in there half a dozen times, but almost every letter started off with not much going on here or not much to report here. And it's mostly because he couldn't. So he would look at what's the weather like and what are the people like and what are they eating and what are they treating me to. And here's some – they've got this thing called apple – that's like Applejack back home, but they call it Calvados. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just hilarious.
That no city in – you can't be a city in England unless you have a cathedral in it.
Right.
You drive these little nuggets of information.
Oh, there's one part of the book that it took me 5 years to figure out. I mean, really. And it was during the scanning because I would reread the original military papers over and over again and the letters over and over again while I was scanning. And he says, good day of hunting. The boys captured 20 SS. And several they passed out some daggers among themselves, and I got this neat little radio. It's 9 by 12 by 18, and only problem is it only tells – I play his German stations. He says, but I'm listening to this beautiful symphony called Werewolf. And then you go to the military papers, and the next day or so, it says Conahan and Gross are working on the Werewolf case. So he's sitting there listening to their radio while they're talking about what they're doing against them. And I'm sure his German wasn't very good, but there's some folks around there that could probably help him out. And he refers to that in the book as well.
Yeah, and not only do you have your father's words, but you have some of the directions and some of the training materials, how to get information from an informant. It's very interesting as this intelligence community is being developed.
Well, I think the intrigue in this book is that it's between the lines, and it's, you know, 350 pages of the beginning of going into the war and to the end, and part of that was going to special agent school in October of 42 and February of 43. And he kept impeccable notes. And those were his handwritten notes from the course materials that are in the full collections, the collection, of course, at the University of Arkansas Special Collections. And I'm hoping that some historians somewhere think, whoa, what's really in this story? And go look at the deep water.
Some of the material that these agents-to-be would get was the history of why Norway fell to the Germans and how Germans use espionage and what to look for. And then there's also a part where they're taught, seek out children for information because they'll talk. It's really interesting stuff.
It gives you some Herb Philbrick FBI kind of approach to what was going on in the 40s and the 50s and why, you know, I mean, you get into the deep, deep, deep part of the training materials and it that I eliminated in the book because they didn't have anything to do with his story, and that's like when they discussed Japan. And there was a reason why we had internment camps. It may be hard to understand, but they were certainly not to be ever compared with concentration camps in Germany. And you can certainly find all that out into every detail about everything, like the informants part of what was going on. There was believed to be 15,000 German spies in the United States January 1, 1942. And they put this team up to be the counter action to the nastiest Nazis, and they wanted people with legal background, preferably, and they were 24 to 34 years old, a little older than the regular run. Dad was 31 when he was drafted. He'd already practiced law and taught law here prior to that. So they taught them every little nuance that there was and got to do it according to what the real life statutes and laws were, and his notes are incredible. They condense those classes down to a page or maybe four pages of things about naturalization, immigration and naturalization, or dissension or disloyalty to America, or treason or conspiracy, or even into the realms of what socialism is and capitalism
communism.
And then when they got even into the more in the things that have disappeared, like it was fascism in Japan too, but they had a monarch. He was a deity. Mm-hmm. And it gets into all these things, the Red Army and where they were and who was what and who started espionage and spying from the very beginning that worked for Bismarck. And, you know, there's so much detail in there as to descriptions of Scotland where battles were fought by Wallace. And there's a glossary that that covers almost everything. I couldn't find the answer to them all. Mm-hmm. There are things in there I don't know what they are.
Were you ever concerned about anything that you put in the book? Like, I know it's been half a century, but...
Oh, I was very, very concerned. Protective. I personally am a believe in liberal arts and conservative economics. I mean, I'm a patriot, and I wouldn't want anything to get out that shouldn't be out, and I wouldn't want to have my father's story out there to be picked at the chinks of armor that might have chinks in them or to harm anyone. And I think that Tom Dillard first gave me the best scope on that, and then I actually hired an intellectual licensed law firm on the West Coast in Portland to back up and fact-find my understanding that these documents are basically public domain after 55 years, and that the assumptions that I have to be able to publish my own father's writings fall in guidelines. And so I was very, very, very concerned.
It's wonderful because the story does go from Camp Robinson. And I love the part when he's in Chicago and he's first kind of learning how to, what's that?
To be a spy.
Yeah. I mean, just the things like, oh, today is the day that I'm going to follow someone or someone's going to follow me and see if they can keep up. Or
right.
We go kind of eavesdrop on somebody in a
restaurant.
We're
playing cat and mouse
yeah.
today.
It was just thrilling to see this first-hand witness account.
The one that I find the most thrilling in the whole thing, and it's done, you know, you could tell these stories 100 times and it wouldn't bother any reader about the book because when they get to it, they'll understand what we're talking about. And plus, you could read it a half dozen times because he wrote so nicely. But he's in Chicago or Washington, I don't remember which, and he says, I hadn't written for a few days because we wiretapped this fine citizen's apartment, and then we had to go down and apprehend him at 2 a.m. on the second day or whatever, and I pinched a nice lieutenant who was giving him all the news and the secrets, and you would have loved my jujitsu arrest move
yeah.
and all that stuff. I mean, it's just like making the lightest of wow, this is, you know, this is a 3-star J. Edgar Hoover kind of story, and they're just doing it between
right.
beers.
Yeah.
I mean,
he writes with a wonderful sense of humor, whether it's about what he's doing or not. There's one point when he has been cajoled into going out with some friends for a few drinks and a steak. And he writes that it's a $1.40 steak, but really it wasn't that good. It was a 40-cent steak. And then he just writes this small little sentence, it made me a sadder citizen.
Yeah.
Just love his dry. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. And you know, and the slang that's in there that's kind of cool because he said it wasn't a fine steak. It was a smack house steak,
yeah.
you know. And there's just all these little neat slang things that come from the period. And talk about writing. I mean, I always dreamed I'd be a writer, and oh my goodness, he was eloquent.
Yeah,
his sense of humor is dry and with a surprising slant to it, and you kind of shake your head and chuckle a little bit.
There are times when it seems like he's not quite sure what's going on, like what's going to be up for him next.
Well, I think that was the case in the whole thing, and if I can tie a couple of points together, it kind of brings it together. You know, it built to 5,000. Well, he started in February.
The CIC did.
The CIC, yeah. And it went back down to 241. Well, the ones that he's communicating with in the very beginning of the book when it was 250 are the same ones that it was at the end of the book when it was 250. And although they never knew what they were going to do next, the military always did. When they go back to CIC Special Training School a second time, a half a dozen of them think it's, what is this? We're in the wrong place. We're not supposed to be here. We've done this before. Well, it's because they were going to be the leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And they had them take the course again. And, you know, and even they, even as you notice as it goes through, it doesn't tell. You don't know that's what's going on, but he's always the platoon leader, or he's always going a second time, or why don't they have me staying here? I'm not doing anything. I could be better use in the war. And then all of a sudden, the next spot he's at is the common denominator. The same guys are involved in the very beginning mm-hmm. as the end. So a lot of them even went to boot camp together in the engineer's boot camp.
It's a fascinating story.
It's
just fascinating.
You can't believe how pleased I am that my father's story can come out, because really the book was not the goal. It is the passion that had to come out. The goal was to preserve it, replicate it on digital format, and get it in a collection. And those things are done. None of it's in my hands anymore. And that was great relief. Mm-hmm. The last of that took place last December. And now we get to box up some artifacts and put them in some display cases, and Dad's story can come out, because he was in the peer group of William Fulbright and John D. McClellan and Sid McMath, and everybody knows how great they were. Well, Dad was too, and he wasn't in politics. He didn't go into the CIA, as this agency later became. And he stayed at home and was a country lawyer and represented some of the best corporate accounts and estate accounts in the country, and was recognized in time, I don't remember which magazine it was in the 60s as being in the top 100 corporate lawyers in America, and was lawyer of the year and a U.S. district assistant attorney, and was the sixth man, so to speak, on the Arkansas Supreme Court when they needed someone to fill in. He filled in for Supreme Court Justice Judge Rose Smith. He was a great man. And this gets his papers in the special collections of the university, where they will really take care of it and do a better job. It is such a bigger project than me. The book has a huge amount in it, but I would love it if it's big, but it gets his story out, and he has a place in Arkansas history that should be reveled.
You know, after World War I, and then you heard it again after World War II, the common saying was, after they've seen Paris, how will you keep the boys on the farm? Meaning they've seen Europe in these ways, and why would they come back to rural parts of America? Why do you think your dad came back to Arkansas?
Popping bugs and bird dogs and slow Delta bass, probably, and just wanting to be the best he could be as a lawyer. Raises bird dogs and raises kids.
Bill Walker discussed the book Nazi's Nightmare about his father's experiences in World War II with me this week inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. The book is now available in Fayetteville at Nightbird Books in Hastings and will be released widely later this month. There will also be book signings this month, including November 12th at Club Frisco in Rogers and November 13th at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. There was much more to the conversation, and we'll feature a much longer version on Ozarks at Large during Thanksgiving week.
Support for KUAF comes from YouthBridge, announcing their texting campaign, which begins today. This campaign will help to fund residential, clinical, medical, and family counseling programs to help area youth. More information regarding Text Youth to 20222 is available on the web at youthbridge.com.
This is Ozarks at Large for a rainy, kind of cool Thursday. First Thursday of November, Jody Beznoska, Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center, with me. Welcome.
Thank you. Here we are.
Yeah.
It's November.
It is November.
I'm not going to say how many days there are before Thanksgiving or Christmas, because that just might freak everybody out.
Yeah.
Because it's certainly freaking me out.
Well, yeah. I think it's 3 weeks from today is Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Thanksgiving I can handle. It's Christmas that kind of freaks out a little bit. But let's just dive into a very busy November and December at Walton Arts Center. Scotch tonight. Perfect weather for scotch, don't you think?
Yeah.
Little cold, little chilly,
exactly, yes.
You warm yourself up. So that's this evening in Star Theater at 6 p.m. And then this weekend, we have a very busy weekend coming up. We have Alice in Wonderland on Saturday at 10 a.m. And we have The Importance of Being Earnest at 8 p.m. on Saturday. We also will have a creative conversation at 7 o'clock before The Importance of Being Earnest. There will be two cast members there with me, and we'll be talking about the play, and we're going to have some fun, hopefully, with these guys. So that will be 7 o'clock on Saturday with an 8 o'clock showtime. Tickets for Importance of Being Earnest are only $10. And actually, tickets for Alice in Wonderland are also very, very affordable. They start at $8. $8 apiece.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you need something to do with your kids on Saturday morning, definitely come see Alice in Wonderland. It's a beautiful, beautiful set, wonderful show. It's being played right now for schools, so lots of school groups are coming in and seeing it. So that's Saturday at 10, and then Importance of Being Earnest Saturday at 8. And then on Sunday at 2 o'clock, we will be at the Springdale High School for a production of The Knuffle Bunny.
Right.
Also great for kids. Also extremely affordable. I think, again, $8 starting price for the tickets. And then we have a bit of a few days off, and there'll be lots of doings going on in the region for Crystal Bridges. So I think it will be a very fun week for the arts, just not the performing arts. But hopefully lots of folks will be out and checking out all the new stuff up there for Crystal Bridges. But we have a performance at 2 o'clock on the 12th with Harold and the Purple Crayon. This is a dance performance of this beloved children's book, and it's done by Hubbard Street Dance Company, which is one of our favorite dance companies, a modern dance troupe. But we're really looking forward to Harold and the Purple Crayon, having a show for young people that is dance-based is a pretty unusual thing. Most dances, most people get introduced to dance by the Nutcracker. You know, this is a chance to get introduced to modern dance through an interpretation of a really popular children's book. So that is on Saturday the 12th at 2 o'clock. We will also have a performance by Hubbard Street Dance in Star Theater that evening at 8 o'clock. Believe that's sold out right now.
Oh, good.
Which is good, but there might be some tickets popping open at the last minute, so keep your eyes open for that. That's on the 12th. Then on the 13th, we have the UA Fall Choral Concert in the Big Hall in Baumwalker Hall. And then 2 days later, Rock of Ages arrives.
That's right.
I can't wait for Rock of Ages. Oh, it is going to be so much fun. What do you say about that show?
Hair metal.
Yeah.
So the music of
Poison,
Rat.
White Snake, Styx.
Journey.
Definitely lots of big hair, 80s clothes. Mm-hmm. It's the thing to know about Rock of Ages is that it's not meant for kids. Mm-hmm. I would say PG-13 probably in terms of the content. It's a show about rock and roll. So there is definitely some language and some fun, a little bit more adult content.
Now, I've heard a rumor. If you drive your Trans Am Firebird to Walton Arts Center, do you get a discount? No?
Well, that hasn't been officially set up yet,
okay.
But I'm going to have to think about that.
All right.
Oh, it's going to be fun. I really hope people show up in costume. You know, we don't force that on people, but sometimes they do, and man, that would be great.
Soundtrack available on 8-track?
Yes, absolutely. I love it. And you know what? If you show up, if you show up in with the big hair and the jeans, and I'm in the hall, I'll get you something.
Okay.
I'll do something for you just because it will definitely be worth it. Rock of Ages will be from the 15th through the 20th, so a full week of performances, 8 shows. Then we will have a little – I think we'll have another break. We'll be getting into the Thanksgiving week. Mm-hmm. So we're back on the 29th with a concert by the UA Inspirational Singers. And then I just wanted to do a quick look ahead, if you can believe that, into the month of December.
Let's do it.
Great time of year to be coming to the arts. I love December programming because everybody's in the good mood because it's a break from shopping. You know, you're having
right.
a good time with your family. So on the 7th of December, we will have Kenny Rogers doing a Christmas show. And on the 8th, Theater Squared will kick off their second show of the season.
That's right.
Their adaptation of It's a Wonderful Life, which will run for 4 weeks, I believe, over
yes.
the Christmas break. And then also we will have SONA, so the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, that same weekend will have their Christmas Pops show.
Fantastic.
So lots of wonderful, wonderful Christmas programming. And then there'll be a couple of more shows with us. We'll have Manhattan Transfer, and we actually just put Asleep at the Wheel
Yes,
on
you
sale.
Did. Yes, you did. Ray Benson and the Texas Swing.
Yes. That's going to be really fun. The name of their concert is Santa Loves to Boogie. So how can you not love that? That's
great.
On the 22nd of December.
Oh,
but that
that's
just
fantastic.
Went on sale
yeah.
just yesterday. So if you want to get good seats for that, get them now because there's plenty of them available. So lots going on. We'll be beginning to talk about January, believe it or not, soon enough, because I want everybody to make sure they get their tickets to Blue Man Group, which is coming up after Christmas. Well done.
Thank you.
And it's going to be fun. So there's a lot of great programming going on right now, both for, if your family's visiting, for for Christmas, for the, around the Christmas time or Thanksgiving, or even just to come up and see, you know, during the Crystal Bridges time, lots of stuff going on.
Now, I have a favor to ask of you.
Sure.
Saturday night, I'm going to The Importance of Being Earnest.
Okay.
At the same time, the Arkansas-South Carolina football game is going on.
Yes.
I am going to DVR this football game.
Okay.
Could you please set up around Walton Arts Center a no reaction zone? I just have to get out of the theater to my car without knowing
what's going on.
Right. Because the game will probably be over. It's a 6:15 kickoff. It'll be over by the time Oscar Wilde has
done his thing.
Right. So just could you put up some signs that say,
Kyle doesn't want to know. Don't tell him.
Surely I'm not the only person inside Walton Arts Center that night that's doing that.
No, surely not. And actually, it's a really good question, because sometimes we will, you know, people will make, you know, will make announcements or whatever. Like during rock concerts, they'll tell you what's going on with the score.
Right.
This is a play, so hopefully they won't do that.
They better not.
We'll work on that.
Okay. Thank you, Jody. WaltonArtsCenter.org.
Or you can get your tickets at 443-5600, or you can come down and see us at the box office. Parking is free until 2 o'clock, and we have a exhibition of wonderful, amazing baskets up in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery that is free and open to the public. So come down and see us.
Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Ithi Agnihotri.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And it's time for our question now.
Right. Two tickets to The Importance of Being Earnest, which Jody and I talked about just moments ago, will be given away.
And the question is very interesting. And Kyle asked me the question when I came in the first thing in the morning, and he...
I got you. I stumped you.
Yes, he quite did that.
Tonight, Fayetteville Underground opens its first Thursday. Tomorrow... Katie Hendrickson will have a report on Fayetteville Underground's possible future.
Mm-hmm.
But I was inspired by the word underground, so it's a question about subways.
Okay.
What city has the busiest subway in the world if you measure busyness by the number of passengers that annually ride the trains?
And it's not what you think. It's not even in the options.
Okay. The options are Moscow, Seoul, and Tokyo.
See? I told you.
If you think you have the answer, or if you just have a guess.
1-800-522-5823. That is 1-800-522-KUAF.
That's right. And the winner will receive two tickets to The Importance of Being Earnest, 8 o'clock Saturday night at Walton Arts Center. Your tickets will be at will call.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 3rd of November, 2011. The outlaw who called himself Black Bart the Poet robbed his last stagecoach on this date in 1883, a Wells Fargo stagecoach not far from San Francisco. His real name was Charles E. Bowles, born in England, moved to this country when he was an infant. He'd served in the Civil War, eventually wound up in San Francisco. He's believed to have robbed 28 Wells Fargo stagecoaches. He never fired a shot. He was afraid of horses, so he was always on foot. And he was always very polite, asking the coach drivers to please throw down your strong box, refusing to take anything from the female passengers, even if they offered them. At the stagecoach he robbed on this day in 1883, he left behind a suitcase which contained a handkerchief which bore a laundry mark, and Wells Fargo detectives tracked him down, and he was sentenced to 6 years in San Quentin prison. The last public execution at Tyburn Gallows in London took place on this date in 1783, Tyburn near the western end of what is now Oxford Street. There had been a tree there, the Tyburn Tree, where criminals were hung, and people would travel from miles around to watch these public executions. But eventually the people of Tyburn decided it was not in good taste to hang people out in public in the main street of their village. And the last person to be executed from the Tyburn Tree was a highwayman, John Austin, who had befriended a traveler and then robbed and killed him. It's the birthday of the playwright Terence McNally, 1939, St. Petersburg, Florida, whose first big success was in 1987 with Frankie and Johnny at the Clair de Lune, story of a cook and a waitress who find love in the diner where they both work. And it was on this day, 1957, a little dog named Laika was launched into space aboard Sputnik, the first animal to orbit the Earth. Scientists knew that she would not come back, and so one of them took her home to play with his children a few days before the launch. She died only a few hours after the launch, and after the fall of the Soviet Union, one of the scientists said he regretted having sent the dog up. He said, "The more time passes, the more I'm sorry about it. We shouldn't have done it. We did not learn enough from this mission to justify the death of the dog." Here's a poem for today by Emily Dickinson, a poem from 1863 entitled "Nature, the Gentlest Mother Is." Nature, the gentlest mother is, impatient of no child, the feeblest or the waywardest, her admonition mild. In forest and the hill, by traveler be heard, restraining rampant squirrel or too impetuous bird. How fair her conversation, a summer afternoon, her household, her assembly, and when the sun go down. Her voice among the aisles, in sight the timid prayer of the minutest cricket, the most unworthy flower. When all the children sleep, she turns as long away as will suffice to light her lamps, then bending from the sky with infinite affection and infiniter care, her golden finger on her lip, wills silence everywhere. Emily Dickinson's "Nature, the Gentlest Mother Is." That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly Editor's Podcast at poetryfoundation.org. And by Novo Nordisk. Since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And time for the answer to the question.
It's Tokyo.
Didn't even let me say the question again.
No.
It is Tokyo. It's the busiest subway system in the world if you measure it by number of riders. 40 million people a day.
Weren't you calculating something? How many would that be in 365 days?
14.5 billion per year. By comparison, the New York subway system says it has about 1.6 billion riders per year.
Okay, that's a lot of math.
It is. But can you imagine that? 14.5 billion people a year on the Tokyo subways.
They must have some good, real good infrastructure, you know, to sustain the whole thing. Okay.
All the right answers win the ceramic cow. We'll pick a winner in a moment. KUAF is supported by Arcega's Espresso Cafe, in business since 1992 and a proud sponsor of KUAF. Arcega's roast coffee beans from around the world at their warehouse off Martin Luther King Boulevard in Fayetteville. Information, cafe locations, and hours available at arcegas.com. And Ozarks at Large and KUAF supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. Dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Fort Smith, Pawpaw. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas.
What town again?
Pawpaw.
Pawpaw. That's over by Fort Smith, I believe?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mudholkar.
Antoinette Grajeda will join me tomorrow for a new edition. You and Christina Thomas, Sunday.
Co-hosting, yes.
On Weekend
I'm excited.
Ozarks. Yes, thanks.